Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. No sports media. No sports media on this podcast. Today's show is an interview with Michael Imperioli and Steve Shrippa from The Sopranos, Christopher Moltisanti, and Bobby Bacala. Most of the talk is about The Sopranos. They have a new podcast called Talking Sopranos, where they review each episode. So they came on to plug that and talk about the show. There is a decent amount of sports talk. We get into a little bit of the Last Dance documentary. And then at the end of the podcast, Steve and Michael discuss their Knicks fandom, which is quite wild. And they defend James Dolan. So that was amusing. So little trip down memory lane. A lot of people I know are rewatching The Sopranos during the quarantine. And now this podcast is out. So it's a great interview. They were both funny. It shared some good stories, some interesting nuggets behind the scenes. So if you're a Sopranos fan, you will definitely enjoy this podcast. If you missed any of the past ones in the archives, last week on the show was Andrew Marchand about the latest sports media news going on, a lot of NFL broadcasting stuff. 2 weeks ago, Bob Lee, legend from ESPN. 3 weeks ago, Kyle Brandt, always amusing, always funny, from Good Morning Football. So check those out, download, subscribe, rate, and review. It all helps. I appreciate it. Stay safe. Stay inside. Listen to podcasts. Don't get within 6 feet of anyone. All right, here we go. Michael Imperioli, Steve Shrippa, a very special episode here of the SI Media Podcast starts now. All right, joining me now, huge thrill for me. And this is perfect timing because if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I'm on my sixth or seventh rewatch of The Sopranos, which I started right after Tiger King during quarantine. So joining me now, the host of a brand new podcast that every single Sopranos fan should be subscribed to, downloading, and listening to, called Talking Sopranos, Michael Imperioli, who played Christopher, obviously, and Steve Shrippa, who played Bobby. Guys, this is a thrill. Thank you.
How you doing, buddy? How are you?
Thanks for having us.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. Like I said, it's funny how life works out with timing. I'm in the middle of rewatching The Sopranos. I'm on season four. And the both of you are pretty prominent in that season where Bobby's wife just died and Christopher is really going through the drug thing pretty heavy. So I've been watching you guys a lot. Before we get into Soprano stuff, let's talk about the podcast a little. You've done four episodes. Fifth episode comes out this coming Monday and it covers one of the more popular talked about episodes, which is Graduation, where Tony and Meadow go visit a college, season one, episode five. Let's start with you, Michael. How have you enjoyed doing this podcast, and what made you decide to do it?
Oh, it's been a lot of fun. You know, Steve and I were not thinking about doing a podcast. We were approached by three different companies about doing it at pretty much at the same time, which was strange. And then you know, I think they approached Steve and I together because we've done an in-conversation live show in theaters, kind of like an Inside the Actor's Studio thing all around the U.S. Last year, we did a big tour in Australia. We were supposed to do a big tour of the U.K. and Ireland this May. That's been postponed, obviously. So we've addressed the show, you know, from in hindsight, you know. But one of the reasons was a whole new generation of viewers have gotten hooked on this show. And I'm talking about young people in their late teens, 20s, and early 30s. They are the podcast generation. And a lot of them have become obsessed with The Sopranos. So we thought, okay, well, people seem to have a demand for it. I think Steve and I are the right people to do it. And there were a lot of other podcasts about The Sopranos. There was a book that came out, but none of them were done by people actually involved in the show. So we decided that story needed to be told.
And Steve, how did it, I mean, The Sopranos had so many outstanding cast members, including obviously the two of you. How did it get down to the two of you? Were there other possibilities? How did it become Michael and Steve for this?
You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if anybody else was approached, but we've done a bunch of projects before together.
Right.
And, you know, like Michael says, we've been touring with this show for a number of years, this Conversation with the Sopranos. And it was myself, Michael, and Vinny Pastore, also myself, Michael, and Tony Sirico. So this is just was our thing, you know, and we got approached together. And, you know, like, you know, we're both pretty good storytellers, I think. Well, Michael was there from day one. I came on the second episode of the second season, and we lasted almost all the way through. So between everything, we know as much as, if not more than, anyone involved with the show. And it just kind of fit, you know.
Like I said, the podcast is called Talking Sopranos, so you guys must check it out. Have you noticed? I noticed. So, you know, I'm on Twitter a lot, and anytime I'm watching an episode during this quarantine, I'm tweeting out something about something I've seen, and I am amazed how many people have responded to me who have said they're rewatching the entire series now during the quarantine. It's like the perfect thing to do. Have you gotten that from a lot of people that while we're all staying in the past 6 weeks or whatever it is, that everyone's gone back and watched the show again, Michael?
Well, we were originally going to record in a studio in New York City at the end of March. We announced that we were doing the podcast at the end of February. And then, you know, the whole world changed in the middle of March, and we were not going to do it at all until everything went back to normal. You know, we just felt, who needs this in the midst of all this suffering and tension and anxiety? And then we started hearing from our fans on social media in a big, big way, saying, "Hey, where's the podcast? I'm home in quarantine and I'm rewatching The Sopranos, and we need it right now." So Steve and I decided to go forward, and you know, our tech crew figured out a way for us to do it remotely.
It's funny because that's what happened with ESPN and the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance. They pushed that up from July to last Sunday. Steve, I know you're a huge sports fan. Did you check that out? I know you're Knicks fan, and I'm a diehard Knicks fan, so it's hard for me to, you know, get on board here with the Jordan Love Fest, but it was a pretty great two episodes that debuted on Sunday.
Yeah, I watched it. No, I'm a diehard Knicks fan. You know, Jordan, of course, he was a, you know, possibly the best player ever. And not that I wasn't a fan, just that, you know, he's with the Bulls. But I Jason, who directed him, I've known, and he's been working on this for years. Right, you know, I know him for a number of years now. I thought it was very well done. I watched the two episodes. The ratings were great, probably because people need stuff, but also because the first time Jordan is talking himself. I mean, he is like the Wizard of Oz, man. You know, you don't get close to him. He's behind the curtain. And so I thought, I think it's very well done.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
it
the
is.
Documentaries on ESPN are great. So I've watched quite a bit of Fab Five and the Bernie and Ernie and some really good stuff. So
They do a great job with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk a little Sopranos. I'm curious, Michael, we'll start with you because I might know what your answer is, but I'm curious. What? Give me the question you guys get sick of the most regarding The Sopranos. This way I don't ask it.
Oh, I get asked about the ending more than anything else. And I'll be honest, I went through different opinions of my own about what it means, and I really don't know what it means, you know?
Right.
So I get asked that all very, very often still after. I guess that means it was a good ending. After 13 years, people are still talking about it.
Tony Soprano is alive and well and living in New Jersey. That's nothing happened. No members only guy. No nothing. What you saw is what you saw. That's it. That's my opinion. We're going to have David Chase on the podcast, and I will ask him personally.
It's funny because when I, you know, knew I was going to have this pleasure of talking to you guys, I wrote down a bunch of things I want to discuss. The finale wasn't even on my list. I feel like it's been talked about so much that it's not worth getting into again, especially when you guys have done so much other good stuff with the show. Michael, I'm just curious. You're part of two of just legendary, iconic moments with that show, the Pine Barrens and the Intervention. I assume you get more Pine Barrens talk from fans than the intervention.
Yeah, Pine Barrens is a fan favorite without a doubt. I mean, it's almost like a movie unto itself. You know, it's just a classic, you know, comedic duo. You know, right. like a Laurel and Hardy or a Norton and Cramden or even like a Waiting for Godot. There's just some kind of almost vaudevillian thing to that episode.
How long did it take to shoot that entire episode?
You know, no more or less than any other episode. It was just that it was pretty much focused there in the woods in Harriman State Park right near West Point up that way. And yeah, we didn't know it was going to snow. It wasn't written for that, but it was cold. It snowed right before we went up there and they were going to shut it down. And then they realized this is a blessing. This, you know, it's like outer space now for these guys. So
yeah,
it just made us even more fish out of water. But it's just funny as hell.
Oh, it's hysterical. Guys, you know? It's hysterical. Yeah. Can you give me an idea of was The Sopranos the type? I want to talk specifically that episode, and then we can talk about the overall show. But was every line in that scripted? Was there ad-libbing by you and Tony Sirico? I mean, everyone knows the big lines in there, you know, his house looked like shit, interior decorator. But there's so many little throwaway lines. I thought, like, when you're in the car eating the stuff and Paulie says to Christopher, try it with the relish. Is that stuff where you can add and ad-lib and throw in your own things? Or is it you read whatever's on the page?
There was no ad-libbing on The Sopranos ever.
Really? Okay.
And that's a testament to the writing because it seems like so natural and, like you said, throwaway and impromptu and stuff. But it was all on the page, very much unlike a Scorsese movie, you know, like Goodfellas, that I was in two scenes and those were all improvisation. Every take was different. We didn't know what we were going to say before we said it. But The Sopranos was very, very tightly written and no ad lib ever.
Do you have one single favorite line from that episode?
From the Pine Barrens episode?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I haven't watched that one. We're going to watch that in a couple of weeks, I guess, when we revisit it. But was that the one where he said, and I should have fucked Dale Evans? Did Tony say that in that episode?
Yeah.
If that's in that episode, that might be my favorite.
That wasn't that Uncle I think Uncle Junior said that, or was that Tony?
I think when you were talking about we should have stopped at Roy Rogers, you tell him.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yes.
That episode?
Yes, right. Yes. That is phenomenal, too, because you have what you think is a dead Russian guy in the trunk, and Paulie says to Christopher, let's go to AC, we'll go to Morton's, get a steak, and not waste the total day, you know, because, like, killing someone isn't enough of a day, or, right, you know, exactly. Thought you could. The line from Christopher where you and Paulie start to fight, and Christopher says, we're just two assholes in the woods, was great. Steve, what would you say is the signature Bacala episode? We talk about Pine Barrens with Michael. I know for me, you were so great in the last season, the first episode, Sopranos Home Movies. Do you have a signature Bacala episode that you think of?
Well, Bacala, don't forget, he's the one that helped Tony find them in the woods.
Right.
So Bacala had a pretty good episode up there, up in the Pine Barrens. I mean, then there was the Santa Claus, then my wife died, and... You know, the first episode of the Soprano Home Movies where Bacala and Tony get into the fight up at the lake house, I remember that was one of the few episodes we rehearsed before the season started. David called and the four of us were up in a little room up at the studio. That never happened, or next to never. And we rehearsed that sitting around the table reading our stuff. And then we were upstate for about 2 weeks shooting that up at the lake house, which, by the way, was Roy Scheidner. That used to be Roy Scheidner from Jaws and French Connection. That was his house. And his wife got it in the divorce and would rent it out. And right across the way was Babe Ruth's old house.
Oh, wow.
And it was right on that lake. Yeah. And that's so... Cool. And then, we used that like as a dressing room, and there was all pictures of Babe Ruth and his family and stuff.
Now you said you guys never really rehearsed the scene. Why did you rehearse that one? Is it because it got physical and you had to sort of do the
fighting? No, we didn't rehearse that part. It was just the Monopoly game and the stuff between the four of us. It just didn't happen that way. You would rehearse the, when you went down, you're on the set the day of, but you had some time, so we rehearsed this. David, answered some questions for all of us, blah, blah, blah. Now, we go up there. It's in July. And when we get to do the fight scene, Jim says, I got operated on my knee or knees, I forget, and says, I can't do it. Won't be able to do it now. And so 6 months later, they build that cabin on the set at Silver Cup at the cost of $250,000. It looked, it was pretty eerie because you thought you were back in that cabin. It was perfect. And that's where we did the fight scene, which took a day and a half. And it looked very realistic because it was two fat, sweaty guys fighting,
Yeah.
And that's how a real fight is, It wasn't like a Steven Seagal fight. He throws a punch and then he waits and throws a punch. So, that was, and I was very kind of proud in a way that David had the confidence in me to open up the last 9 episodes. I mean, here it was,
Yeah, you were a big part of that last season. I'm curious, you mentioned that Bobby played a big role in Pine Barrens because it's Bobby and Tony who go rescue Christopher and Paulie. I know you've told this story before on an HBO special that was excellent, but for my listeners, in case anyone hasn't seen that, can you tell the story of how you got James Gandolfini to crack up when you enter Junior's house with Tony? Tony's waiting for Bobby. Bobby comes in some
Elmer Fudd outfit.
Yeah. And James Gandolfini couldn't keep it together. Can you tell that story if you don't mind?
Well, I'll tell you another thing from the Pine Barrens. Tony Sirico, who him and Paulie are kind of interchangeable in a lot of ways, he didn't like the pillows in the hotel next to West Point. So he sent a production assistant 2.5 hours or whatever it is back to Bay Ridge to get his pillows out of his apartment so he could sleep on his own pillows. But besides that, Jim had seen me in the Elmer Fudd outfit, and we were out in the snow and we found Christopher. And then the next day, he had to laugh. He had to make it like he was seeing Bacala for the first time because we shot the wood stuff first. So I had no idea, how am I going to make this guy laugh at 7 in the morning? There's nothing funny. I asked the prop guy. I said, so do you have, you got something to make him laugh. You got a dildo. You got something, And believe it or not, he had a whole bunch of dildos, different sizes, shapes, colors, which is quite amazing. And I got one that was about 3 feet long, like an Italian bread. And when I turned the corner and I'm off camera, I'm twirling that around. And that's when you see Tony Soprano fall over. He's got the bottle of, I think it's Jack Daniels. And that's him falling over. You could almost see Dominic, Uncle Junior, he almost cracks because nobody, not even the director, Steve Buscemi, only me and the prop guy knew that it was coming,
It's a good job by Dominic not cracking.
Yes, he almost cracked.
I always thought the Bobby Jr. relationship was so underrated. So many funny scenes. For me, Michael mentioned it. I think the comedy is such an underrated aspect of The Sopranos. The scene where Junior thinks he sees Junior and Bobby on TV, and it's Larry David and Jeff Garlin from Curb Your Enthusiasm. I mean, to think of that is so hilarious. Next level genius that
hilarious.
I can't
hilarious. That is brilliant. I love that.
Michael, you said, I just want to be clear, you're watching these episodes now for the first time since the show went off the air on HBO 20 years ago. Is that accurate? Yeah, and what about you, Steve?
Haven't seen it at all. I haven't seen these at all, man. I mean, we're doing the rewatch. It's also being it's free on HBO Go now. Right. So people are watching that, and they're watching along with us. I mean, we've got I mean, we're into this thing 2 weeks, man, and it's got over 500,000 downloads.
Yeah, I'm not
already,
surprised.
You know, and we go scene by scene and we tell stories about, you know, what went on the set, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just two guys having, that's like two friends having lunch talking about the series. But the show has ended 13 years ago, 2007. And I have not watched him the early episodes since they were on the air, you know.
It's fascinating to me. Like I said, I've gone back and rewatched it. And it's fascinating to see how much it holds up, how much it would work today, but also how old it is. There was a scene in an episode I watched the other night that I put on Twitter that people got a kick out of, where Carmela's using a laptop and AJ comes downstairs and asks, are you done, you know, being online yet? Because back then with the AOL dial-up days, only one person at a time could be online. You guys didn't even have like the iPhones during the show, but it still holds up and could air today. And that's all because I guess the writing and the acting, but it's wild to see that.
No, the big score in episode two, they hijack a truckload of DVD players, which are a brand new thing.
Yeah.
They're comparing it to the laser disc and DVD. Now DVD players are gone. You know, it's so funny. The young people, you know, who are really, like I said before, really getting into the show, have no problem with whatever cultural or time references that we have. You know, they don't feel like they're so distant from it, which is really great, because a lot of shows, good shows, you know, and you watch them again and they're dated and they don't really transcend and they don't get picked up by the next generations. I think some do, but most don't. So, that's a testament to how good the show is, I think.
Absolutely. This is for each of you. We'll start with Steve. I hope you can answer it. You might not want to, but I'll throw it out there. Listen, the writing was phenomenal. Everyone in charge of the show was phenomenal. Nothing should have been done differently. Everything was perfect. However, you're actors. You're in the show. Is there one storyline you wish either was sort of played out differently, or a storyline that never happened that you would have liked to have seen happen? Steve?
I thought the writing was absolutely incredible. I mean, I've worked on stuff that, you know, you read the script and you go, man, how the hell am I going to make this sound for real? You know, but you didn't have to do that with The Sopranos. You know, I enjoyed playing Bobby every minute. You know, he was a kinder guy. He only killed one person. That was because he was forced to by Tony Soprano. But Michael told the story that there was talk of, at one point, a spinoff, The Bacalas, a comedy with Janice and Bobby. And I would have liked to seen that happen.
For sure, yeah. That would have been great.
A single camera, The Bacalas. Yeah. But otherwise, nah, I never questioned anything. I never questioned why isn't Bobby doing this or why is he doing that. I honestly did not.
Well, the show was great at sort of leaving things hanging a little bit. You know, Furio and Carmela had the thing, but then Furio leaves. Melfi was rape and she does not tell Tony. But, you know, so I didn't know if there's anything where you say, oh, you know, it would have been interesting if this happened or that didn't.
I liked that as the series went on. Bobby, who was not the brightest guy, but or was he? He married the boss's sister. He was suddenly at the right. He was at the right, to the right of the boss on Sunday dinner. Suddenly he's the brother-in-law. He's in the Soprano family. Was he as stupid as he made out to be? He found them in the Pine Barrens. He started making money, became an earner. You know, his character certainly changed from when you first see him, you know? So I enjoyed that ride, you know?
Right. What about you, Michael?
I think it would have been interesting to see what Nancy Marchand would have done with Livia in the season two and beyond. You know, it was tragedy that we lost her after the first season, because she was one of the main characters, man, and just this formidable adversary to Tony, even though she was his mother. And I would have very curious to see how things would have played out, you know, if she hadn't passed away.
Yeah, that's a really good one. What was the first moment for each of you? First moment where you realized this show was a cultural phenomenon, and not just any, you know, this, like Tiger King comes and goes. It's, you know, people watching a day, it's gone. This was a cultural phenomenon of, you know, a level that we don't see often. When was the first moment for you that you realized that, Michael?
I got bored with Tiger King right away, I have to say. I mean, after the initial, like, how, you know, just nuts and weird these people were, it just, like, I couldn't get through more than two of those. I found it kind of boring after a while.
Well, I will say this. If you only watch two, it really gets batshit in three. So, but
yeah,
I
but it's like, I don't know. It's just something about it that just didn't grab me. Besides, it's like watching a, you know, car wreck. It's not that interesting.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
Now I lost my train of thought. What was the question you were making? When you first realized it was
yeah,
a big hit, right? Yeah. You know, when the show went on the air in 99, the reviews for the show were so over the top, you know, wall-to-wall raves. That Saturday Night Live did a spoof about the reviews of The Sopranos. Not about the show, but about the reviews being...
Right, I remember,
you know,
yeah.
So that was the beginning of it, I think. You know?
Yeah. What about for you, Steve?
You know,
you came on in season two, but...
I started shooting in July of 99, June of 99, and it was just... I was there, I think, on the set the day when they got nominated, the first cable show to ever get nominated for an Emmy. 16 Emmys they were nominated for. So right, that took it to a whole nother level. And then when you're shooting the show all them years, you know, you don't, maybe you're too close to it. So you don't realize, you know, you don't realize what it is. You know, you're seriously thinking about getting killed every episode. I know I was. Right. Every year, you're not sure if they're going to do another season. And we had these tremendous 15-month breaks and a year breaks and these things in between. But I tell you, at the end, we watched the finale together, nine of us, down at the Hard Rock in Florida. Over 10,000 people showed up.
Wow.
And we walked to a red carpet in the casino, 10,000 people that even Stevie Van Zandt, who obviously has played to 100,000 people,
right,
he was even impressed. And they were just crazy, rabid fans. And you know, at the end, when it was coming to an end, it was on every newspaper, every magazine, every TV show, every Monday morning. It was everybody wanted to talk to you. The Today Show, it was everywhere. I don't know of a show before or after that has happened with.
I agree. I'm curious because you both end up, your characters both end up dying in the last season. Bobby makes it to the second to last episode. Christopher was almost to the last episode, a few before that. So do you find out your character is dying when you get the script? Does David Chase or someone call you beforehand? Is it a contractual stuff? Let me start with you, Michael, too. And how bummed were you, Michael, that you didn't make it to the end?
Oh, I wasn't bummed. I mean, you know, by that time, it was the end of the whole series. Everybody moving on. So it was, by then you had a guarantee in your contract that you get paid for all produced episodes anyway. So,
oh, good. Okay.
So that didn't matter. But I knew a long time in advance, maybe a year, maybe more, on when and how it was going to be. And I thought it was a good idea.
Okay. And Steve, what about you?
You know, I found out I shot the scene in the train store on Valentine's Day, 2007, February 14th, maybe a month, 3 weeks before David called me and came to my apartment. I guess he was in the neighborhood. He came up. The doorman rang him up. I opened the door. He said, "I guess you know why I'm here." It was like a real hit. And we sat down, and he was vague about how it was going to happen. He said a train store, and I thanked him for changing my life. And it was a good kill. And I know that people were wearing that as, you know, the cast members were wearing that as a badge of honor. If they killed you off in the right way, if you just faded away, that right. was no good. I mean, Michael's was great. Mine was great. Ralphie's was great. You know, yeah. some of these people yeah. had great kills. I mean, that they still talk about now. So, yeah. You know, and I, it was like, you know, after, you know, it was the last season, all bets are off. Okay. If that's the way the story goes, that's the way the story goes. But I'll tell you what, if I would have got killed off in season two or three, I would not have taken it that well.
Right. Yeah, I don't blame you. You second to last episode. That's a good run.
Yes.
It's a good run. Just two more quickies, and then I know you guys got to go. So you've rewatched five episodes from season one so far?
No, we're next one is 11.
Okay. So when you when you've rewatched it, are you – you already knew that the performance by James Gandolfini in that show was – as good as it gets in television history. Have you been even more in awe on the rewatch? Because I know for me, rewatching it, I feel like she gets the credit she deserves, but in a way she doesn't. And I'm talking about Edie Falco. I mean, she goes toe to toe with him. And even the little scenes, it's pretty awesome to watch as actors. I'm curious what you think of those two together, Michael.
I knew they were great, you know, while we were doing it. I mean, I knew Edie before The Sopranos. We had done a pilot together. We had done a movie, maybe two movies together. And she was one of my favorites already. And I knew what Jim was like from working with him. But I am reminded of how great they are. But also just how great the whole cast is.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I'm watching Robert Eiler's performance in the first few episodes and was blown away by the work he was doing and the subtleties and just the honesty of it. And I think, I remember in early on, someone made a sports analogy and said, The Sopranos had the deepest bench strength of any TV show they've ever seen. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, it's true. Anybody can come off the bench, you know, you haven't maybe even seen him in a couple of episodes and like all of a sudden knock it out of the park. I mean, that's right. the kind of team we had. And, I'm reminded of that constantly rewatching these shows.
There are a lot of people on Twitter who think in the first episode of the entire series, season one, episode one, AJ has the best line in the entire show. Do you guys know what that is?
No fucking Zeta, yeah.
There, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, he's great in the
show.
And he was very young. He was, what is he, 11?
I think 11, 12, and didn't really act before. He did some commercials. We had him on as a guest, very instinctual. He's terrific. So is Jamie Lynn Sigler. She was young, not that experienced. And we had them both on as guests. They're terrific.
We'll plug we'll give you a good plug. You can tell everyone the guests and everything. Yeah. Steve, for you watching it back, was there anyone who you sort of were like, he's even better than I remembered. She's even better than I remembered. Or is it just everyone?
Well, I got to tell you, I really enjoyed Stevie Van Zandt. I mean, now here's a guy who didn't act at all. And man, that first season, he's terrific. He's very low, you know, kind of low key. He does a great, great job. I mean, and I'm looking at it like this guy looks like he's been acting for 20 years. Of course, Uncle Junior, Dominic's a long time. I mean, I don't see a flaw, but there was one scene Michael brought up in episode 9 where Meadow tells Tony about the coaches molesting her friend on the coach is molesting her friend. And in that little scene, like Michael pointed out, you know, he's happy. He's enraged. Then he feels bad. I mean, in a matter of, you know, a minute, 60 seconds, 90 seconds, you see four different colors of him. I don't see anything. And Christopher, I mean, this is one of the greatest characters in TV history. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, incredible, incredible. Funny, crazy. He's a racist. He's everything. He's a murderer. He's a junkie. I mean, talk about a complex character.
Yeah. I just watched the episode where Christopher tries to get the FBI woman who flipped Adriana to have a threesome in the club. That was a good Christopher moment as well. Since you were talking about Christopher, last one here, and then I'll let you go. I appreciate the time so much. I got to ask, because Goodfellas is my all-time favorite movie. There was a callback in The Sopranos one season where Christopher shoots the guy in the foot and says it happens. How did that come about? They come to you with that? Do you suggest? I mean, that's such a great callback.
I just saw it in the script when I read it, but that was David Chase, I think. I think it was his idea to do that, just as a, little homage to Goodfellas and the character I played there. David was very influenced by Goodfellas. I think he once was quoted saying there probably wouldn't have been a Sopranos without Goodfellas, and a lot of the actors in Goodfellas made their way eventually, if not at the beginning, into the show.
Yeah. There's a scene, too, that I just rewatched with Melfi's having dinner with a bunch of people and they're talking, they mentioned Goodfellas. And I was like, oh, wait a second. She was in there. It's a good little throw in that they do there with that.
Yes. Definitely.
All right. So the podcast is Talking Sopranos. You guys can get it everywhere. You get podcasts, Apple and all that stuff, Spotify. You want to tell us who we got coming up? I know we've got the graduation episode coming up, but you want to talk about guests you've
college.
Had or will have?
That college. Episode's college. College. Yeah. I don't know why I'm saying we had episode, four is Michael Rispoli, who played Jackie Aprile, the boss, at the beginning of the series and was also one of the final three actors being considered for Tony Soprano. And that's an interesting story about the casting of Tony Soprano. We have Robert Eiler. We have Jamie Lynn Sigler. We have Sheila Jaffe and George Ann Walken together, who were the casting directors, who were as key to the success of the show as anybody. Henry Bronstein, who was a producer and director of The Sopranos, and many, many more on the way.
Excellent. Sounds great.
Hey, James, I can't believe you haven't listened yet. You're a Soprano fan? You haven't listened to
I did listen. I did listen, but here's what's with the quarantine, it's hard for me to listen to as many podcasts as I have. I'm catching up on
it. It's on YouTube also. Don't forget YouTube.
Okay,
listen, that's good to know. If you're a fan, you don't want to miss this. I'm not joking.
I have a list of like 20 things I'm supposed to watch and listen to. It's tough to keep up with that.
All right.
You know, and I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. I'm still working. So.
James, you're backpedaling.
I'm not backpedaling.
You're backpedaling. Even
though they're an embarrassment of epic proportions and really one of the most pathetic franchises in the history of sports, how are you holding up without Nick games?
I have a Nick jersey on right now. I am a diehard fan. I'm okay with it. I'm okay. I want them to win. Michael is also a huge Knicks fan.
Yeah, the Knicks are the only reason I watch basketball, and
that's not good. That's not the good. Knicks,
they are good, and I don't care what anybody says. If you're not a Knicks fan, you don't get it. And if you are, God bless you.
You know what the thing is, though, James? What gets me, and I've been a Knicks fan since I'm a kid. What gets me is how the fans turn. You know, I've seen them
all. They've been terrible for 20 years.
I understand. 20 years. I understand that. But I'm still a fan. I'm a real fan. I'm not a front runner. There's a lot of guys. Listen, even at the Knicks games, you go to the games and you see all these guys come. They lose a few games. You never see them again. Come on. Yeah,
man, every team should have a fan like you. A few games they've lost.
And then when they do good, forget about it. Everybody comes out of the woodwork.
That's exactly right.
The Garden is like this destination. But I do think the fans have turned more because of Dolan than the actual losing. That's my opinion on
it. Dolan was paying people salaries and taking care of his employees. And
that
and
is true.
Stuff away to charity. And listen, you know, he takes care of the people that work there. And the Garden's full every game.
And another thing, James.
Go ahead.
Listen, Jim Dolan is a good guy, and they just want to say the bad things all the time. Uh-huh. He gives a ton of money to charity. He's a good cat. And I'll tell you another thing. If you go to a game, I don't care if the Knicks, whatever their record is, if it's the fourth quarter, it's like the seventh game of the playoffs. The fans are crazed. The fans want to win. I don't know who to blame. All I know is it's not all Jim Dolan's fault. He's a good guy, and that's it. I'm a Knicks fan.
And
I will stay a Knicks fan.
Nothing like being at the Garden for a game, man. It's just electric. Always is. Even if it's a rough game, it's always exciting.
I'll just say this. The only way I would let people come on my podcast and talk positively about James Dolan if they're two guys from The Sopranos. I won't fight back on it. Anyone else, I would fight back, but I'm not doing it with
well,
two guys.
You know what, James?
From my all-time favorite show.
You could always go over the bridge. There's the Nets. Go ahead over there.
All right.
you guys should mix in some sports on the podcast.
Hey, one time the Heat wanted me to do a spot for them or something, you know, like, you know, for their, I think for their arena during the games, and they were fans and stuff. And I said, well, I can't do that. I'm a Knicks fan. And they first thought I was joking. And I said, no, I'm not joking. I'm not going to do anything for the Heat because I'm a Knicks fan. And then they were really surprised and almost offended.
Yeah, because most people sell out. That's a good job. Are you bigger? Are you both bigger Knicks fans than Yankees fan, or bigger Yankee fan than Knicks?
I'd say pretty close. I'm a big Yankee fan and Knicks fan. Yeah, pretty close. I enjoy very much. Listen, I'm a sports guy. 100 pounds ago, I played at Brooklyn College. You know what I mean? I played in the Garden my senior year, and I had 13 points, if you didn't know.
I got it. Okay, so here's what's funny. In this rewatch, I tweeted something about Bobby the other day, and someone replied to me with a picture of you dunking the basketball.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, Bobby had ups.
There you go. There you go, baby.
You could dunk, Steve?
I could dunk. You saw it on TV.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. There's an episode where Bobby dominates on the court.
Listen, I'm going to say it here. I'm going to break your heart, but they built me a ramp to run up and dunk.
No.
I swear.
No, but in your day when you were playing for Brooklyn College.
No, I could dunk a volleyball. Yeah. Nah.
So wait, are you being, they really built you a ramp?
They
to
built
dunk?
Me a ramp, so that's what you see me dunk, yeah. All right, you heard it here first.
Like finding out there's no tooth fairy.
There you go. I should have never, you could cut that out.
No, I'm going to leave that in. I really appreciate the time, and I can't wait to listen to all the episodes of Talking Sopranos. It's good to know it's on YouTube. I'm definitely going to, that'll make it much easier for me to listen to. So any Sopranos fan listening to this, and I know there are because the people who follow me on Twitter know I'm a Sopranos fan. Talking Sopranos, a must listen to podcast. Michael Imperioli, Steve Schrippa, thanks so much for the time, guys.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you. Stay safe. Stay safe.
Go Knicks. Go Knicks.
Go Knicks.
Take care.
See ya.
All right. I had a blast doing that. I knew I would. Michael Imperioli, Steve Schrippa, they were phenomenal. Talking Sopranos podcast. Enjoyed discussing the show with them. Big thrill. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you're a Sopranos fan, let me know. I always want feedback. Hit me up on Twitter, email, and please subscribe, download, rate, review the pod. And if you missed any past episodes, Andrew Marchand last week covering NFL sports media news, NFL heavy. And 2 weeks ago, Bob Lee. 3 weeks ago, Kyle Brandt. All for your listening pleasure. And that wraps up this episode of the SI Media Podcast. Stay in, stay safe, and we'll see you next week. Take care.